Blog Talk Radio.
And
welcome. Oh! To the
Depot! Got something new for you tonight.
Fredell all the way outside to watch for three on the way.
A bunch of IU fans.
Who
instead, the new John Washburn and my friend Ari Kaufman, two of the bigger basketball fans you may ever meet. Instead of talking about just IU basketball, we will probably be talking about any and everything related to college basketball. Hey, Ari, how you doing?
Good, John. I wanted to welcome everyone to a special edition of the Assembly Call. And I am the aforementioned Ari Kaufman. Been with Midwest Sports Fans for 4 years, a co-editor and a writer. I write about baseball, especially minor league baseball, college basketball, even do some obituary writing. And John Washburn, who you just heard from, writes a lot of pro and college basketball, the occasional NFL or college football column, mixes some baseball in there, and some interesting thought pieces. MSF's founder Jared Morris and company will return Saturday night after, per Jared, Indiana takes out its Minnesota frustrations on Iowa. We'll have to see how that goes. But, John, with the month of March beckoning just a few hours here, I figured it was a proper time to analyze the last 4 months of college basketball and where the final and most exciting month might take us. So are you ready to talk about that, or would you rather discuss the looming sequester and bench press and NFL combine, things like that?
Well, as much of a fan as I may be about politics, and you know how much I love my boy Manti Te'o and all the rumors swirling around him right now, I do feel like I probably can offer a little bit more expertise talking about some college basketball, even though I do like the NBA better. Basketball is basketball, as you know, from those awesome WNBA commercials. So I'd love to talk about some college basketball today.
Yeah, basketball is basketball. And the WNBA commercials remind us of that. But let's talk some men's college basketball at the Division I level. We're not going to put a time limit on this. Let's just see how it goes. As the cliche states, things are fluid. Things are going to change tonight after we get off the air. And earlier this week, we had number one seed potentials that went down. You had Florida. You had Indiana go down. You had Michigan go down in shocking fashion to Penn State last night. You've got teams like Kansas and Georgetown and others maybe moving back toward the one line. But I suppose we should start with a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and I think it's become near and dear to yours and a few other friends of mine. The game of the year is in Durham Saturday night. Are you aware of that, game of the year in college basketball?
Oh, I forgot about the looming Miami versus Duke battle that is just going to shake the foundations of college basketball this year.
Well, if you listen to anyone at ESPN, it will. And I don't know really honestly what these teams are ranked. I know they're 1 and 2 in some RPIs. I think, sometimes sabermetrics can obfuscate the issue. But we say that tongue-in-cheek here because if you just kind of look at the overall ACC, and we have throughout the season, I believe the facts are on our side when we say that Duke and Miami are good teams. But the rest of the conference, you got two other teams that are probably going to make the tourney, Carolina and Carolina State. Virginia is one of the last teams in or out, depending where you look. I think our friend Andy Bottoms here at MSF had them as one of the last teams out. They are playing Duke tonight. We'll see how that goes. That'll be interesting. But, where are the good wins? Where are the good wins for these teams like Duke and Miami? I'm not going to go through the whole schedule. We've been through it. What's your analysis of Duke and Miami? Their flaws, their strengths, why or why not they should or should not get a 1 seed, a 2 seed, or frankly, I think there's an argument to be made that they could get a 3 seed.
Well, I'd love to talk about seeds in a minute, but I guess the first thing I would just like to talk about when it comes to Duke is just what do I think about their team? And, I think it's really clear. First of all, I'm not one of those Duke haters. College basketball is is tough to talk about because, especially where I live down in South Carolina, it seems like there are two types of college basketball fans, people that love Duke and hate North Carolina and people that hate Duke and love North Carolina. And you're either a Duke lover or a Duke hater, and you're never allowed to talk rationally about them. You're only allowed to speak through awesome hyperboles. But the thing with Duke is, you know, I'm a huge Coach K fan. I think he's one of the best coaches in any sport, let alone college basketball. Some of my favorite basketball players ever played at Duke. Jay Williams, used to be Jason Williams, was one of my very favorite college basketball players back when
And a good analyst right now, too, frankly. One of the few guys at ESPN, I think, who makes sense. Go ahead.
Oh, I completely agree. You know, what a shame that happened in his career. He was one of my favorite players. I really think he was going to be one of the best young point guards in the NBA. I love J.J. Redick. I like a lot of Duke's players, but the thing about Duke this year is they really have been two different teams. You know, as poor as they have looked recently, and, you know, they have lost a few pretty bad games on their schedule. They got blown out by Miami. One of my friends always says, good teams don't get blown out. Good teams lose all the time, but good teams don't get blown out. And I am prone to agree with that, but it's really easy to forget just about how good they were in November. And while they haven't been that good in a long time, they haven't had Ryan Kelly in a long time. And while Ryan Kelly is a goober, as some of my friends like to say, and, you know, he's one of the uglier guys that we've had in college basketball for a long time, he did make that team markedly better. He added some toughness. He was your classic small forward, intangible guy that Duke seems to always have. And without him, they simply have no size besides Mason Plumlee. So the team that we've seen, honestly, the last 3 months has not impressed me in the least. And that team that we have seen, I think you could make a very easy argument that they're a 3 or a 4 seed. It's going to be interesting to see if Ryan Kelly comes back, if he plays well, what he can do for this team, because obviously college basketball seems to be missing a great team this year. And I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, as much as I love the Big Ten, as much as I think that it's better, far better than the ACC top to bottom, if Ryan Kelly came back for Duke and made it into the tournament and you got Coach K coaching him up, I would not be surprised to see Duke make a Final Four regardless of their seed.
Well, you know, you make a good point. I believe Ryan Kelly, you know, the Ryan Kelly watch seems to be on. He's going to return for senior night, which I believe is Tuesday against Virginia Tech, another brutal home game for Duke with Virginia Tech. They've got two games before that at Virginia and home to Miami. That'll be tough. I actually think they win both of those games, but we'll see how that goes. Just have a gut feeling about that. I've never heard of a player who is not certainly – was never going to be a player of the year candidate even if he had played all year. He's probably not even – probably the third best player in their team, and maybe he's a glue guy and you know more about the nuances of Kelly and basketball in general than I do. But I've never seen a team that has, you know, been seeded in a way on potential. Well, you know, people say they're a one seed because they're going to get Ryan Kelly back. Just as Kentucky, I suppose, will be in or out of the tournament in some ways based upon the fact that they had an injury to their star freshman, Noel. Duke was great in November. I talked to friends at work, you know, about the fact that this is a great Duke team. They now, some of their wins don't look as good as they did at the time. Beating a Kentucky team in the opening game that are a bunch of freshmen, you know, in a close game isn't that impressive. But they beat Minnesota, who has been okay this year. They beat VCU, who's one of the best teams in their conference, actually the best team. They beat a Louisville team who's been in the top 10 most of the year, and they beat Ohio State, who in any other conference would be probably first or second. None of those were road games, true road games. All of those were either neutral or in Durham. And, of course, since then, as I've mentioned a million times, I don't see any good wins. I literally do not see a good win in 3 months for Duke. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I should probably. I know they beat Temple at home in early December, and I know they've beaten North Carolina State at home, and they beat a North Carolina team that I watched that game against Duke and Durham, who looked really awful. And I, frankly, am not sure that they're good enough to be in the tournament yet, North Carolina, but we'll see. And we know they've struggled versus Boston College and Wake Forest on the road, and even were trailing Georgia Tech and Durham at the half, as I recall. And, of course, they lost badly at Miami. They lost to Maryland, who's not a tournament team anymore. It shouldn't have even been discussed as a tournament team except for the reputation before last night's collapse. And they also lost of course, their road game at, help me out here, where did they lose their other road game? NC State, who, you know, average at best. So we'll see what happens down the stretch, but I don't think seeding teams based on potential is a good idea. I really don't. As far as Miami goes, I look at them in many ways the same. I mean, they're a different team in terms of how they're composed, and they're a different team in the sense they were not expected to do much this year, and frankly, early on, they didn't do much. They lost to Florida Gulf Coast. They lost to Indiana State, who is not a tournament team. They got crushed by Arizona, who's good, but not a number one seed, probably not even a number two seed anymore. And eventually they got hot. And I know they beat Michigan State early, and then they ran through an ACC that's not that great. And I think their best wins were at the North Carolina schools. And lately they've struggled quite a bit. I know they barely beat Clemson. They barely beat Florida State, some of the lower-level teams. And, of course, they lost to Wake Forest recently. So if they lose at Duke, and I think they will, just to, and they'll finish with a couple wins, I'm sure, I don't see them anywhere near a one seed. And, frankly, you know, depending what they do in that – silly and overrated ACC tournament, and I say that about all conference tournaments, I'm not sure that Miami even gets a two seed, but we'll see. Everything's fluid. Your thoughts on Miami?
Well, the big difference, I think, between Miami and Duke is I see a lot more upside for Duke because Duke does one thing well. They score. They're eighth in the country in scoring right now, averaging almost 80 points a game, you know, and that's without Ryan Kelly, a guy that gives them more size and space at the floor simultaneously. Miami, on the other hand, you know, Bill Simmons has coined this term a good bad team. You know, every year in every sport, there's a team that is better than all of the other bad teams, and they play a lot of other bad teams, and they always beat all of the other bad teams, but that doesn't make them good. That just makes them the good, bad team. You know, you look at what they've accomplished this year. As you said, they lost to Florida Gulf Coast. They got blown out by Arizona. They lost to Indiana State early on, and then they got into the ACC. And while they have won a lot of ACC games, you know, just looking at their last five games, you have a loss to Wake Forest, one of the worst teams in the ACC, a team that lost to Nebraska. You have a home win over Virginia by 4 points, a win over Clemson by 2, where they only scored 45 in one of the classic reasons why I sometimes can't stand to watch college basketball sort of games. And you just kind of look at some of their numbers. You know, and numbers aren't everything, but they're 136th in the nation in scoring. They're not even averaging 70 points a game. They're 117th in rebounding. They're 271st in assists. You know, they shoot a lot of threes. They don't really work the ball super well. They're shooting 45% from the field. They're not great at anything. They have beaten a lot of bad teams in close games. And, you know, I think that's the tribute to their coach and to their upperclassmen that they have on the team. You know, it's kind of a nice throwback in the era of one-and-done basketball to see a team with upperclassmen that know how to win close games. And I think they've done a good job of winning those close games. But at the same time, the really good teams, they blow people out, you know. And I guess they did blow out Duke in a game that they shot unbelievably in one of Duke's first games without Ryan Kelly. But good teams, they blow out Clemson. They blow out Virginia. They don't lose to Wake Forest. And these are the things that really worry me about Miami. They do a lot of things okay. They're good at winning close games, but they're not a one seed. I don't even think they're a two or a three seed.
Well, let me touch on that as well, and we can move on to a different conference. Because the ACC, first of all, they have a lot of chance to play bad teams. You've got five or six bad teams in that conference. I'm not going to rename all of them. And you've got a couple mm-hmm. average teams, you know, and really, I don't – North Carolina, North Carolina State would be probably eighth or ninth place in the Big Ten. And I also want to reiterate something I've mentioned before, that just like you, I don't hate Duke. It's really sad that we have to reiterate this and mention this before I write an article, before we discuss it, because we have Duke friends, and you know that whether they'll tell you through email or anonymously in a comment section that you're a hater, and they kind of discard your whole argument. And I'm being serious when I say I admire Coach K. A lot of people hate Coach K. I don't. I don't really like Roy Williams or Jim Boeheim, but I do like Coach K. And much like you, I really like a lot of Duke players. Not all of them, but I think I like more of their players than most any team in the country. What I don't like are a lot of their fans, especially some of the younger ones, and you know, that can go for a lot of teams. And I don't like the media obsession with them. So I don't hate Duke at all. I dislike some of their fans, some of their antics we've seen this year even. And I don't like how they're treated by the media, which doesn't really mean I dislike Duke. It's kind of like if you don't like a politician, the way he's treated by the media, you don't necessarily dislike him or her. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But you sent me a great little piece by Mark Titus, who played for, I guess I use played lightly. He wrote the bench for a couple of years, 4 years, at Ohio State. And
yes.
He has a blog on your favorite site, Grantland. I say that in a joking way. It's, I know you like it more than I do. But he made a good point about Miami. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there's a portion of it that kind of just summarizes a lot of what we said. He says the Hurricanes remind him a lot of Arizona's hot streak at the beginning of the season. They kept winning, but too many of their close games were against bad teams. In the past week, and this goes back to about 2 weeks ago, Miami beat Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia by an average of 4 points. And all of those three teams, only Virginia has a chance of making the NCAA tournament, and they're, you know, on the brink. The Hurricanes' experienced lineup is a big reason why people have been so high on them lately. Four seniors start, none of them with tourney experience, by the way. And they bring another one off the bench as a sixth man. How much experience do they really have? How many meaningful games have they played? How many times have they had a few days to think about the magnitude of an upcoming game, stay mentally focused, take a good team's best shot, and still come out with the win? Unless you want to count the win over Duke where the Blue Devils still are figuring out how to fill the Ryan Kelly void, the answer is once at North Carolina State. I believe that was a one-point game. And of course, he ends by saying, I know saying this makes you a Miami hater, and Miami fans want everyone to applaud the Hurricanes and say they're a feel-good story of the year. They get no respect in the preseason. Look how they've done. Well, congrats. I applaud the job Jim Larrañaga has done, as do I, and they'll probably be one of my Coach of the Year nominees that I'll write about for MSF probably early next week. But it doesn't make you a hater if you question the team. And you can't predict the tournament because you don't know who they're going to play. But I could see them losing the second round. And frankly, unless they get a great matchup, I think they will lose no later than the Sweet 16. But we'll see. Did you have anything else on the Miami before we move on? I apologize for the lengthy diatribe.
No, I can definitely see that too. Well, they do have a better coach than Missouri. You know, Frank Hayes is a common early exit in March. I can see Miami losing early just because they do rely so heavily on the three ball. You know, they always say live by the three, die by the three. With that said, because they shoot the three ball so well, it wouldn't necessarily shock me if they made an Elite Eight or a Final Four this year. But I think that would be more due to the overall level of college basketball this year, much less than it has to do with how good is Miami really this year. And I would be much more shocked if they made it to the Final Four than I would if they had an early first or second round exit.
That goes for Duke also with the three-point shooting. I mean, they lost to Lehigh last year. They lost to Arizona badly the year before. They won the title the year before that. And before that, for 4 or 5 years in a row, they lost very early. Teams that rely on the three-point shot are very hard to predict. So, you know, it's really hard to predict. It's hard to predict how 19-year-old kids are going to perform in the biggest stage. In any event, that's why I don't gamble, and nor do you. But I do think Duke will win the next two games. So, haters, you can't call me a hater because I just said that your team is going to win the next two games, which will be their two best wins in ACC play if they get them. So I can't really be a hater if I'm saying they're going to win those two games. Let's move on. Big Ten, best conference in America, hands down. I think even the people on the coast will agree with that. I'm sure some people still think the Big East is good, and the Mountain West, frankly, is almost as good. That's a really good conference we can talk about later. Big Ten, you know, in a perfect world, if Michigan hadn't lost last night and they finished strong and Michigan State, you know, did well in the conference tourney, you know, I was thinking about three number one seeds from the Big Ten, but it's going to have to depend on what happens. What's your overall analysis of where the top five or six teams in the Big Ten are going, and how many teams from the Big Ten might get into the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, the eye test, which is really, quite frankly, what I rely on the most when I watch college basketball, because who knows what's going on with the rankings on any given moment, since I'm pretty sure coaches just hand it to some GA on their staff and say, hey, make my rankings for me this month. The eye test tells me that IU, Michigan, and Michigan State are three of the five best teams in the country. I would throw Kansas in there. I would throw Gonzaga in there. But Michigan State, and IU are three of the five best teams in the country for different reasons. And the fascinating thing about those three teams. And this is what I think makes the Big Ten the best. Maybe you don't think the Big Ten is the best conference, which, I mean, I would argue very much against that. But the thing I love about the Big Ten, it's so exciting to watch because with IU, Michigan, and Michigan State, you have three teams that are all very good and play three completely different styles. And I truly believe, I don't think that IU or Michigan or Michigan State, I don't think one of them is necessarily better than the other two. But I do believe that matchups are what's going to doom all three of them if and when they come to a matchup that is against them. You know, a lot of people think IU is the best team in the country, and it's hard to argue that they've been up near the top all year. But they have a pretty big flaw. Whenever they play someone with legitimate size, where Cody Zeller can't have his way and Christian Watford can't play that stretch four and they got to get someone else in there, they struggle.
Minnesota,
you know,
and Wisconsin, right? Would be the two
Minnesota, Wisconsin, and even Butler. You know, Butler doesn't have a lot of size, but Andrew Smith is a great defensive player who's bigger than Zeller, and he can at least guard Zeller one-on-one. And Butler is a much more physical team than IU, so while they didn't have them beat on size, they were more physical than IU in that contest. So IU, they can outscore anybody, and that's what they try to do. But when they play a team like Minnesota, Zeller looked bad, and when Zeller doesn't have his way, they can lose to anybody.
Yeah, I'd like to hear Jared Morris and his crew, their analysis of that. They may agree, they may disagree, but that's the kind of analysis that I rarely hear when I'm hearing, you know, general cliches on media. And, you know, you have a little more insight. You live in Indiana like I did. And by the way, for those of you outside of Indiana, IU is Indiana University. It's not Illinois, Idaho, or Iowa. I know we speak in acronyms sometimes. You make some good points. I don't disagree with those five teams being the best teams in college basketball. I think you actually nailed it. Now, which one doesn't get a one seed is a question. And frankly, you know, three of them might get two seeds. But Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State, Kansas, and Gonzaga, and we'll talk about Gonzaga later because I think they'd be the fifth, and there's reasons for that. They are the five best teams in college basketball. Big Ten games this year have been great. I travel a lot for work, so I'm at hotels on cold winter nights, and there's two Big Ten games a week that are better than, in terms of the matchups, that are better than Duke and Miami as a matchup. You know, in Indiana, Michigan State, and then Michigan against Indiana, and then Ohio State against Michigan State, and then Wisconsin against Michigan. I mean, we haven't talked about Wisconsin and Ohio State. It's a great conference. Wisconsin, by the way, I believe is only a game out. And, you know, no one's talking about them any higher than a four, I would think. But, you know, they've beaten Michigan. They've beaten Indiana in Bloomington, which, you know, frankly, think about that. Indiana has been incredible at home this year. And then you remember the fact that Wisconsin went in there and beat them. And Indiana did not make the return trip to Madison. They had a scheduling, I wouldn't call it a quirk because it's the way it goes, but they had a lucky scheduling break, I'd say. Indiana did not go to Madison this year, and they haven't gone to Michigan yet. They did beat Michigan State and Ohio State. But problem for Wisconsin is they have some questionable losses, I believe. They obviously lost at Minnesota. I think they lost to Ohio State and Iowa. But other than that, they've had some great wins. So I think they're a team that's definitely – certainly you can't say that Wisconsin is not a – 1-4 seed, and get Ohio State. I mean, you know, they're a victim of the fact that Big Ten is so good, because Ohio State, I think they're playing Northwestern now, so I'm assuming they're going to win tonight. Ohio State would win most conferences in America. And I'm not saying they win every conference, but I think they'd win at least two or three of the major conferences, and obviously pretty much any mid-major conference. Andy Bottoms, our guy, has Ohio State as a 5 seed. You know, I'd lean more toward a 4 with them, especially if they finish strong. He has Wisconsin as a four. He has Butler as a 5. If you're ready to move on to Butler, I could tell you, you know, this is what frustrates me about people that have biases. I have a bias in that I cheer for Butler and Creighton, okay? But I can tell you when these teams are not as good as they are said to be, overrated, overseeded. Butler has 3 or 4 great wins. I think we've discussed this, that, you know, I don't think many teams have better wins than Gonzaga, Indiana, Marquette, and North Carolina, although Carolina isn't quite as good. I believe Illinois beat Indiana, won at Gonzaga, and I think they beat Ohio State and someone else. But Butler's not a 5 seed. They're just not. They've lost too many games in the A-10, and the A-10's good, they'll probably get 5 or 6 teams in, but there's too many losses. They've lost St. Louis twice, who's a great story and probably should be a 4 seed, frankly, and I think could compete with Miami and Duke in the ACC. But Butler is not as good as they were last year. I'm sorry, not as good as they were in years past. They are better than last year's team, which didn't even make the NIT. Tell me
sure.
about your thoughts on Butler. Do you have some?
You know, I truly believe that Butler is struggling a little bit with trying to find their identity. You know,
you're getting a little deep on me here. This is, you know, these are still sports.
Well,
let's not talk about identity crises and things like that.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm a huge Butler fan. I grew up going to Hinkle Fieldhouse, grew up watching them play. And 3 years ago and 2 years ago, when they made the deep runs in the NCAA tournament, you know, I was that nerd that was taping their games and then watching them play defense and videotaping their defense and showing it to my dad. And, you know, I'm a 23-year-old guy, and I'm trying to get my dad down here. I'm like, hey, watch this, Dad. Watch how they're packing the lane on the offside of the ball screen and everything. And I studied that team, and they built their identity on team defense, physical team defense. And you look at their team this year, and Brad Stevens still wants to do that. And he's got 3-4 guys on the court at all times that want to play physical team defense. Andrew Smith is a great physical player. Kyle Marshall, physical, smart player. Roosevelt Jones, physical player. And then you got these two guys that are kind of Butler outliers. And Rodney Clark is one of my favorite players. Kellen Dunham, I think, is one of the most underrated players in America. I think in a couple years, I really think he's going to have a chance to win a National Player of the Year award. He's going to dominate the Atlantic 10, kind of like
there's
what
Kellen
Dunham does.
There's a guy right there,
Kellen
Dunham, that probably very few people in the country have heard of, by the way. So just to remind everybody, he's a freshman. He's, I believe, from Pendleton, from the Indianapolis area. And he's averaging probably about 10, 11 a game, shoots a 3-ball well. But he was recruited by a bunch of teams. Remind everybody, he was recruited by some of the top teams, no?
Oh, yeah, he was recruited by IU, Kansas, and I think Michigan State. So
okay, well, let me tell people, the last time there was a Butler player that was recruited by top teams and chose Butler, that would have been Gordon Hayward. So different
sure.
players completely. But just so you know, when people decline – BCS level schools and go to Butler, doesn't mean they're not BCS level players, and doesn't mean Kellen Dunn will play in the NBA, but he's a talented kid.
Sure, and you know, back to Butler, those years that they were great, they made their living with the defense, and where did it start? It started with their point guard up top, pressuring the ball everywhere it was. Remember who that point guard was, Ari?
Ronald Norred.
Ronald
Shelvin
Norred,
Mack. Shelvin Mack.
One of
A.J. Graves.
You know, Norred is probably one of the worst offensive basketball players I've ever seen play Division
I
college basketball.
I think you're a better offensive player than he is. You're probably better.
But
he's
you know,
a teacher now, by the way.
Oh, he's coaching high school basketball, I heard. A great guy. I would love
right,
to meet
yeah,
him someday.
Absolutely, great guy. Everyone liked him. Yep.
But he was Butler's identity, and he started out by playing physical, on-the-ball defense, up top, point guards could not go wherever they wanted. And when you start defense that way, the entire rest of the defense falls into place. And Butler's problem this year is they're trying to play that physical, swarming, aggressive team defense with Rodney Clark up top. And what they have to do with Rodney Clark, who's one of the best scorers in America, but they really have to hide him on defense. So that means either Kellen Dunham or, more often than not, Roosevelt Jones has to guard and pressure the other team's point guard, and he can't put the type of pressure that Brad Stevens wants him to put on opposing point guards. And other teams, well, they're still allowing a pretty decent average for points against. Other teams are scoring easier on Butler than they ever have. And it's that clash of identity. You know, Rodney Clark and Kellen Dunham are out there, and they could each get you 30, and you have the idea, well, we can outscore teams. But with those other three guys, couple guys off the bench, no, we're going to play defense. And you've seen them struggle, especially down the stretch in some late games, you know, losing to St. Louis twice, losing to LaSalle, losing to Charlotte. All those games besides one game against St. Louis were close. And I think they have an identity problem this year. I'm not a psychologist, I'm not an analyst into minds, but I do understand playing on a basketball team, you need an identity. And if you don't know what you are, you're going to struggle at times. And as much as I would love to predict a big run in the tournament this year for Butler, I don't see it happening.
No, I don't either. And that's why I'm pretty honest about that. I'm going to do something right now I've always wanted to do. It's the top of the hour. Let's reset. For those of you just tuning in at 7 o'clock Central, 8 Eastern, maybe you're just getting off work at 5 o'clock Pacific and you're tuning in. I say this in a joking way, but let's reset where we are. I'm at Ari Kaufman, and John Washburn is with me. I'm based out of Lincoln, Nebraska. John's based out of the great city of Charleston, South Carolina. We're talking college basketball. We've talked for about half an hour. We've done a little bit on the ACC and Duke and Miami and their game Saturday, the game of games, let's call it. And then we've talked a little Big Ten. We've talked some Butler basketball, and just we're going to start moving toward a little bit more on some teams and then maybe some analysis of the game itself. But I just wanted to conclude on Butler. You mentioned Rodney Clark, and I mentioned that people don't know many guys on Butler. They do know Rodney Clark because he scores, and people like scorers. He's played 3 years at Arkansas where he was a starter and averaged anywhere from 12 to 15 a game. Set out last year, so he's a fifth-year senior. That means he's probably 23, maybe 24 years old. He's averaging 17 a game. He shoots 90% from the free-throw line. He shoots well over 40% three-pointers, and he is not the defensive player that Ronald Norad or other point guards that Butler's had in the past have been. So there's a shortcoming for Butler. They also have quite a few A-10 losses, two to St. Louis. No shame in that, though one wasn't close. The home loss to Charlotte's the one that's going to keep them from getting a higher seed, probably, and of course they have the loss. They have a non-conference loss to Illinois, and they have the other A-10 loss against LaSalle, who's probably maybe a tournament team, but we'll see. They also have a loss to Xavier in the opener, which didn't count as an A-10 game. And let me remind folks that Butler's got two very interesting games coming up. If you're a fan, Saturday afternoon they play at VCU. The only time the two teams will play. Obviously, they played in the Final Four 2 years ago, so people know about these schools. They're in second and third right now in the conference, respectively, behind St. Louis. And Butler closed the season with Xavier at Hinkle Fieldhouse on the 9th, Saturday night. Xavier-Butler is one of the reasons Butler joined the A-10. Cincinnati and Indianapolis are 2 hours apart, similar size cities. The teams do not like each other. They had some incredible finishes over the years. A couple years ago, there was a game where Gordon Hayward's shot shouldn't have counted because the clock stopped about 20 seconds earlier, and the Butler got a few extra seconds, and he made a layup that gave Butler the win, a non-conference game in December, and I remember the Xavier coach went crazy, and some players broke some drinking fountains in the old Hinkle Fieldhouse, and let's just say those fans don't like each other. I saw a little bit of that when St. Louis played at Butler last Friday, another rivalry, teams 220 miles away, so Butler may be traveling a lot more with the A-10 because they have to go to the East Coast, to Massachusetts and Rhode Island and D.C. and New York. But to have the Xavier and St. Louis rivalry, especially since those teams are good, is very intriguing. Now, I apologize. I do have a cold, folks, so I apologize for if there's any sniffling going on in the back. I won't talk about Creighton too much because they faded a bit. They had a big win last night. Doug McDermott had 33. Let's talk briefly, though, about Player of the Year, and then Coach of the Year, and then we'll go back to a couple teams. Most people are talking Trey Burke. Of course, Victor Oladipo has not gotten a lot of publicity since he, despite his points per game being a little bit lower, he's been incredible lately. And Doug McDermott's a guy that's kind of faded from the discussion because he had a couple of so-so games and Creighton lost a few. He's still averaging 23 a game. He's averaging almost 8 rebounds, 88% from the line, 47% from three-point range, 56% from the field. I don't think McDermott will win it. I think there's bias against him. And I'll be frank, it's biased because he plays in the mid-major, and it's biased because he's white. I don't have a problem saying that. They'll say, oh, he's white, he's slow, whatever. He's not a great defender. Who's going to be Player of the Year? Who should be Player of the Year?
Well, I don't know who's going to be Player of the Year, but I'm actually going to go off the board and tell you who I believe should be Player of the Year. And it's probably someone that's going to shock you, but I think the Player of the Year should be DeShawn Thomas, and this is why. DeShawn Thomas, for those of you that don't know, plays for Ohio State.
I sound shocked. I that's my shocked face, you see.
you probably haven't heard him said. You probably haven't heard his name raised once by any analyst over the last several weeks when talking about player of the year. But this is why I think DeShaun Thomas is player of the year. If you – the Big Ten is the toughest conference, especially at the top. You got those three teams you talked about earlier, plus Ohio State, plus Wisconsin. And if you lined up Michigan's roster next to Michigan State's roster, next to Ohio State's roster, next to Indiana's roster, Ohio State clearly has the weakest roster of those four teams. And yet, here we are near the end of the Big Ten season, and Ohio State is still right in the mix, right in the thick of the Big Ten, of the Big Ten race. You know, you look at IU. Zeller is very important. Oladipo is very important. Yogi Ferrell's been a great player for them. Jordan Hall is one of my favorite players in America. You know, Oladipo's great. But without Oladipo, this IU team is still very good. Go up north. You got Michigan, who is just loaded top to bottom. And I'm a point guard fan. I'm biased towards point guards. I love Trey Burke. I think he's the best point guard in America. And I would love to say he needs to be the player of the year. Unfortunately, in several of their key losses this year, especially yesterday against Penn State, other teams have been able to neutralize Trey Burke. And Trey Burke might be just as valuable as DeShaun Thomas, but he's been neutralized several games. Yesterday, they basically took Burke out of the game in most of the second half. Michigan State, they got Harris, they got Appling, they got others. They are loaded with talent. And you look at Ohio State, and they have some nice pieces. Aaron Kraft, one of the best on-ball defenders I've ever seen play the game of basketball at any level. But they have no scorers. They really don't have any scorers. You know, Mark Titus used to play for Ohio State. He's been bemoaning the fact today in his latest article that Ohio State's not going to go very far because they don't have a second scorer. And everyone's hoping it's Aaron Kraft after the good game he had last week. But Aaron Kraft is not going to be their second scorer. And the amount of pressure that is on DeShaun Thomas every single night, not only to score, but to create scoring options for his entire team, is unbelievable. And here you have him. He's averaging 20 points, 6 rebounds. Not crazy blow-you-away numbers, but for what he's asked to do, he's my player of the year. He's more valuable to his team than any other individual player is to his team. If you take DeShaun Thomas off of the Ohio State Buckeyes this year, I honestly don't know if they go 500 in Big Ten play. So that's why DeShaun Thomas is my player of the year.
Well, you know, he averaged 20 a game. No one else on the team averaged double figures. So there's a great point. I don't know if college basketball player of the year is supposed to be the most valuable player, like it is in baseball, where you have the argument about whether Miguel Cabrera is more valuable to Detroit than Mike Trout is to the Angels. But, you know, in terms of value, it's hard to argue. Although Doug McDermott, frankly, has not much around him either. But I'm sure if you wanted to go value Virginia Tech's player, whose name escapes me, who's averaging like 27 a game when the team is one of the worst in America, I suppose he's very valuable, but they haven't won enough games. So you make some great points about DeShaun Thomas, and absolutely, without him, they don't go 500 in the Big Ten. The Big Ten has, you know, 10 or 12 games a year that are tougher than most conferences teams play all year in other, you know, in other leagues. So I think you make a good point. I appreciate you bringing that up. Do you – number one seeds, I want to go back to that real quick. Let's talk about three teams we haven't mentioned, Kansas, Gonzaga, and Georgetown. Let's begin with Georgetown because – I watched part of their game last night. I hadn't watched much of their team this year because I don't like the Big East very much. But they looked great against Syracuse, who I'm glad to see is fading because I am not a fan of Syracuse. I don't hate them, but I dislike them much more than I dislike Duke. And Georgetown won there, and they won at UConn last night in a double overtime thriller. Georgetown's now becoming a trendy choice as a one seed. 4 losses overall, 3 in the Big East, but 1 really bad one to South Florida. You know, I never know how much they weigh the conference tournaments, but my gosh, if Georgetown winds up beating Syracuse again this year and winning the Big East tournament, they'll be a one seed. There's no, they'll be the trendy one seed pick. What do you think about them as a one seed? And then we can talk about Kansas and Gonzaga.
You know, if they did run the table the last couple games, I would be okay with them getting a one seed. I think that they are every bit as good as Duke, who's probably going to get a 1 seed. I think that they are nearly on the same level with Gonzaga and Kansas. And, you know, as much as I think Kansas should have that fourth number one, locked up. They lost to TCU. You know, they lost their focus halfway through the season, and it's easy for teams to lose their focus halfway through the season in those late January games, and you're looking ahead to the tournament and saying this game doesn't really matter all that much. But you look at what Georgetown has accomplished lately, you know, winning at Notre Dame, which is never easy, beating Louisville, beating Marquette, winning at Syracuse, like you said. I mean, those are four very quality wins. Those are more quality wins in the last month and a half than a lot of teams, including probably Kansas, have all season. So, yeah, I guess it's trend. And Georgetown's one of those teams that's kind of snuck up on everybody. And it's becoming cool to say, you know who I think should be a number one seed? Georgetown.
Yeah.
Because
there's a team like that every year. And sometimes they deserve it, sometimes they don't. I think this team will deserve it if they finish as strong as they have been. They certainly right now, I believe, should be a higher seed than Duke of Miami and Florida, for example, who we didn't mention much about Florida. They've had a couple bad losses. They're obviously not going to be a one seed. They could be fading toward a three. They play in a weak conference. They have some great players. They have some injuries. They have some experience, but we'll see what happens then. They still got to go play at Kentucky, and Kentucky, you know, plays well. That could be another loss for Florida. Gonzaga plays tonight at BYU. I never like doing these podcasts like this because someone can listen to this tomorrow or Saturday, and if Gonzaga loses by 25 points in Provo, they could say, well, they're not a one seed, and, you know, obviously we don't know who wins the game. But let me make the anti-Gonzaga argument, and you can make the pro argument, and then we'll switch for Kansas. How's that?
Sure.
I would just look at Gonzaga playing in the West Coast Conference. I'm not going to pull up college RPI or whatever, but it's not a good conference. It's been better in past years, not a good league this year. St. Mary's is on the bubble. BYU's not in. No one else is any good. They've rolled through that conference, not a loss. That doesn't say much to me except for winning at St. Mary's by double figures and nice. Non-conference, as usual, they played a tough schedule. They didn't quite play as many road games as usual. They went to Stillwater and won by 1 point, which at the time looked like a nice win. Now it looks like a great win because that's a very good Oklahoma State team. They went to they lost to Illinois at home. Illinois is a good team. They've had some good wins. They lost in Spokane, and they beat Kansas State. I believe that game was in Seattle. Otherwise, no other road games. Usually they play more road games. Of course, they went to Butler in the middle of January and pretty much played them even up. And they had Butler got a fluke win when Stockton Sun threw the ball to Butler and they scored at the end. But let's be honest, though the game was in Indianapolis, Rodney Clark didn't play. That's a lot of offense you take out. So we'll see what Gonzaga does against BYU tonight. BYU's the third best team in the conference. We'll see what they do in the tournament if they beat St. Mary's again. But I'm not giving them a one seed right now, despite their great record. You?
Well, you can go on and talk about all of the RPI and sabermetrics and all that stuff that you want to talk about. You can go look at their schedule and look at a piece of paper and say they're clearly not a one seed because of who they've played. But I'm going to trust my eyes.
You're not going to bring up the eye test, are you?
I'm going to trust my eyes, and I understand all of you out there. You're probably thinking this is some guy with contacts, you know, that doesn't even have good eyes. He's probably never played basketball before in his life, and I understand. But I actually think that Gonzaga showed me more in the Butler game, in a loss, showed me more that night than really I needed to see the rest of the year. What they showed me that night is that even though they lost to a team that didn't have its best player, they showed me that they could be flexible. And Gonzaga, I truly believe, is the one team in the entire country this year that doesn't have a big sort of glaring flaw. You know, Michigan, they might be too young, and their coach cannot make in-game adjustments. Ohio State, they don't have anyone to score besides Deshaun Thomas. IU has proven to be soft. Kansas is young and loses their focus sometimes. But Gonzaga, they're just this interesting team out there playing on the West Coast, under the radar. Nobody's watching them. But they do some things really well. They score really well, ninth in the nation in scoring, second in field goal percentage, very important. And that field goal percentage one is the big one because they don't just score a lot, shooting threes running up and down the floor. They do hit threes. They do play fast, but they can also hit you inside. You know, Olynyk is one of the best players in America. He probably has a solid case to be player of the year. He probably would make a much better case if he wasn't playing for Gonzaga. But they've got other guys on that team, too. They can play inside, outside. They can get up in your face and play defense when they need to. And Gonzaga is flexible. You know, they've played games this year, won low-scoring games. They've won high-scoring games. They scored 103 points against the team, you know. But they've also come back. They beat Oklahoma State at Oklahoma State in a game in the 60s. You know, they're flexible. They can do a lot of different things. They don't have a huge weakness. They are well-coached. And I don't think it's a bad thing to kind of go into the tournament under the radar a little bit. So
I don't know if they're under the radar. I mean, they're number one seed in a lot of people's brackets. Your analysis is great. I mean, obviously, the people on television don't have the time to go into a five-minute analysis. But you make good points, whereas someone else might say, well, Gonzaga, you know, they always fade in the tournament. Well, you can't compare 1999 or 2006 or whatever to this year. You can't even compare last year. So it all depends on the matches in the tournament. You know, as far as a one or a two seed this year, there are so many teams that really could be a one or a two seed. It's not a huge deal except for the prestige of saying you're a one seed. But we'll see where they end up. I would love to see them get a one seed because that would mean that Duke or Miami or someone that's maybe less deserving doesn't get it. I just don't know that I would give them a one seed if I was voting. As far as Kansas, as of right now, I'd give them a one seed. They were a one seed for sure on February 1st before they had their slump. Even though they weren't ranked number one at all, they were up to number two. They had a slump. They lost to Oklahoma State in Lawrence. They never lose in Lawrence. Oklahoma State's a good team, very good team, but they should win that game. They had probably the worst loss of the season by any – the biggest upset of the year, more than Michigan-Penn State even, because the Big Ten is so deep that I think Penn State, you know, could have won three or four games in the Big Ten already and, frankly, put them in the ACC or the SEC, and they'd probably be middle of the pack. But they lost to TCU, and Bill Self made it. Put a great point about the Topeka YMCA and how that was the worst loss since Naismith lost 8 years ago against the YMCA. Yeah, you know the whole point. But then they go out to Oklahoma and lose again. So there were three bad losses. So Oklahoma's probably a tournament team. But what do? They bounce back and absolutely demolish Kansas State, who was in first place at the time, in Lawrence, 48 hours later. Then they go down into Stillwater, a very tough place to play, win a game. I believe it's an overtime game. And then, of course, in Iowa State, Monday night, a game they should have lost. They wound up winning that game in overtime. So they've got the heart of the champion. I hate that cliche. But they're going to win their last three games. They play West Virginia and Texas Tech at home. I think they win at Baylor. They're going to do pretty well in the Big 12 tournament. I think they get a one seed. It depends what happens with Michigan State and Michigan and Miami and Duke. But I think they should be a one seed now. I totally understand what you're going to say. And why don't you go ahead and tell me why they shouldn't be a one seed?
Well, you know what?
By the way, let me just point out they also non-conference won at Ohio State easily. That's a pretty impressive non-conference win when Ohio State was ranked sixth in the country. Go ahead.
I have a list in front of me, reasons why Kansas is not a number one seed, and I was very prepared.
Wow. It's for a school teacher. Oh, that's why you have a lot.
I was very prepared to read them off, and I was very prepared to go PTI on you and, you know, play the devil's advocate and give you reasons why Kansas does not deserve to be a number one seed. But I got to be honest, they're a number one seed. My eye test tells me that, but also the thing that you just said, you know, they lost to TCU. That was a terrible loss. But what did they do a few weeks later? They absolutely demolished them, 74-48. I think that's a game that I looked up at one point
terrible.
And TCU had like 9 points.
That was a betting man. I would have taken Kansas minus the 25 in that game or whatever.
You know, they demolished TCU. They demolished Texas, which, I mean, I think I could coach
a team. I have a point about Texas later we'll get to. We love Texas. Go ahead.
Well, right. Rick Barnes, coach of the year every single year,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
But they demolished Kansas State. I think that those three games that are kind of this huge red flag, especially to my Michigan friends that want to be keep saying, you can't be a one seed if you lose to TCU. They just lost focus. I mean, you look at that team, they got a lot of youth. Their best player is a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
McLemore's going to be one of the top picks in the draft. You look at what they did November 15th to January 28th, they just demolished everybody. And February comes, and they lose focus. They lose focus for three games. Their coach calls them out. After their coach calls them out, what do? They just go right back to crushing teams. I think Kansas is going to finish up the season strong. They're going to beat West Virginia. They're going to beat Texas Tech. They're going to beat Baylor. You know, they won that game. They should have lost a couple nights ago against Iowa State, which they got some nice officiating there to help them out. But Kansas is a one seed. Kansas is one of the best teams in the country, and as boring as it may be, I can't disagree with you, and I'm not going to disagree with you just for fun. I think you make some good points, and Kansas should definitely be a one seed.
I'd like to see what a team like Florida, Gonzaga, Duke, Miami, Arizona, I want to see what they would do in the Big 12 or the Big 10, for that matter. You can't interchange those. When the committee is making these selections, and I realize they also factor in things like who's going to bring the biggest crowds, and that benefits a lot of teams, but most, you know, Duke and Kansas, and all, they all travel well, and where the sites are. But Duke and Miami and Florida and Arizona, these teams would lose a lot of games in the Big 10. I'd say 7 at least, 11-7. Especially for Duke and Miami. So what Kansas has done every year, by the way, remarkable. What are they? It's 12-3 in the conference this year. They're going to probably finish 15-3. Pretty amazing. Bill Self is as underrated a coach as Brad Stevens is in some ways. I think they're both of the top five in the country. I actually think Brad Stevens probably is the best coach in the country, and I think you probably agree with me. Let's briefly, before we move on to a couple closing topics, go out west and talk about the Mountain West and the Pac-10. I spent most of my childhood from age 7 to 27 living out west, but I now know what East Coast bias is or Midwest bias. It's hard to stay up and watch those games. And frankly, the Pac-10 has been awful for about 5 years, so it hasn't been worth my time. But the Mountain West is great. I don't have the cable channels they're on, so I don't watch enough of it. But they're going to get 6 teams in, it's possibly. Certainly a good chance of getting 5. Andy right now has New Mexico, who is probably going to be up to maybe even a 2-seed when all is said and done, as one of them in. And then, of course, San Diego State, UNLV, Colorado State, a great story. And he's got Boise State in there, and I think Air Force, who was picked for last, could get in. We'll see what happens. Do you know much about the Mountain West? Do you have any thoughts on what former Hoosier Steve Alford's done out in New Mexico again? They've had a couple of good seasons under him.
You know, I got to be honest, I don't think anyone out west is very good this year besides Gonzaga. Pac-10 or Pac-12 or whatever they're calling themselves right now, I haven't paid much attention. I have watched Shabazz Muhammad a few times because, again, I'm an NBA fan. I like to see what the next
Did you call him Shabazz?
Shabazz Muhammad. What,
the boy's
what do you
name
call
is Shabazz. Come on, get
it's
your
Shabazz.
Islamic surnames or whatever correct, all right? Shabazz Muhammad Abdul
hey.
Rauf.
Shabazz Muhammad sounds way better. Even if it is Shabazz, I think you should change it to Shabazz because it sounds
awesome.
I think his
name is Mike Smith, actually, but go ahead.
You know, I really haven't paid a lot of attention. I've watched Arizona a few times. You know, they intrigued me earlier this year when they started off to such a good start. But I don't see anyone from out west making a whole lot of noise come tournament time. You know, I'd like to say that UCLA has the talent to do it. Because guess what? They do have the talent to do it. But guess what else? Ben Howland is their coach. And he and Rick Barnes are fighting it out right now to see who's the worst coach in America. So,
Arizona is an intriguing team. Because Sean Miller is a good coach, former Xavier coach. And early this year, they were great. But they had a lot of really close wins they should have lost or could have lost. They beat Florida in a fluke at the end, scoring like 7 points in the final minute back in December. They crushed Miami, by the way, which let's not forget that. They got lucky to beat San Diego State out in Maui. They should have lost to Colorado on a Colorado shot that didn't count in Tucson. They could have lost to Utah, who's awful in Tucson. And then they started losing some games at Oregon. I'm looking at their schedule. I don't know this by heart. They lost at home to UCLA. And most recently, they lost at Colorado, home California. And last night got ripped at USC, who, by the way, is not good, 13-15 overall. They go to UCLA tomorrow. Arizona could conceivably drop to a 3 or 4 seed very quickly, and they were thought of as a 1 seed, you know, a month and a half ago. Do you see them, from what you know of them, doing anything in the tournament? You mentioned Gonzaga, the only Western team. Would Arizona or New Mexico maybe be a team that can make a move? Oregon, anything? Or do you just want to move back east, Midwest, and talk more about that?
You know, this is Midwest sports fans, and I am paid a very good amount of money to cover the Midwestern sports teams. So I would just be more comfortable moving back east or maybe doing some National Coaching of the Year stuff.
National Coach of the Year. Well, the problem is I'm going to mention Steve Alford because the fact that he's 24-4 and 11-2 in what really is probably the second or third, probably the second best league in the country, he's got to get some consideration. I think the St. Louis coach, Jim Cruz, who's 11-2 in a good Atlantic 10, 22-5 overall, And I don't want to spoil it because I do plan to publish an article about this early next week. But Bruce Weber in Kansas State, the much maligned Bruce Weber, run out of Champaign, did nothing there. Used Bill Self's players for 1 year and then was a failure pretty much every other year. Went out there, took over a team that was supposed to be, as far as I know, not very good this year, right? I think they were picked fifth in the Big 12. He has won the most conference games by any Kansas State coach in over 40 years. They've been in the top 25 all season, first place much of the time. They beat Florida in Kansas City. They of their five losses, two were to Kansas, and one was to Gonzaga, and the other was to Michigan. I don't know if you were even thinking about Bruce Weber. Has anyone done a better job than Bruce Weber?
Yes, one person has, for sure.
One person, thank you.
at least one person. Sorry, IU fans, it's not Tom Crean.
Tom Crean, right?
We might get to him and his weird facial expressions and his horrible in-game adjustments that make John Boeheim even blush.
Oh, boy.
But there is one guy. there is one guy that has done a better job than Bruce Weber this year. And in order to really fully understand it, you have to kind of zoom out from just the basketball picture and look at the entire picture of what happened to his program. You know, this is a guy who wasn't even supposed to be coaching at the beginning of the year. And then the coach takes a leave of absence. Their team starts out 3-3, and their coach, a legend, a coach that has taken other schools to the national championship game, dies. And all of a sudden, your entire program is in upheaval, and you're sitting there in a conference where you're probably not picked to finish better than fifth or sixth, and you're going up against great coaches every night, like Brad Stevens, like Shaka Smart, lots of good coaches in the Atlantic 10. And here St. Louis sits near the end of February, and they're 22-5, 11-2 in the conference. They've beaten Butler twice. They've beaten VCU. You know, they have done more than any other team has in the entire nation, and their coach has handled so much more than anyone else has had to do. You know, I always say, and I emailed you this earlier, there are seven parts, there are seven aspects of coaching college basketball, you know. But when it comes to actually in-game coaching and in-season coaching, there, you know, you take recruiting out of it, and there's only six spots left. But the most important part of college basketball coaching, I truly believe this, it's more than X's and O's. It's not even about the Jims and Joes. It's about getting your guys to come to play every single night. And especially in a conference like the Atlantic 10, where a lot of your players actually probably are going to class, and they've got a lot of other things on their mind. What the St. Louis coach has done this season is unbelievable. You know, you could throw out Jim Larinaga from Miami. I probably butchered his name too. Maybe we can just call him Shea Baz Larinaga and people can
joke
about that. But, you know, it's got to be the guy in St. Louis. It's got to be Jim Crews.
Yeah. Jim Crews, and by the way, I did mention him earlier, and he'll be included in my article. You nailed it all. I will mention for the Indiana fans who are listening, he played in their 1976 championship team, by the way. He's not a young guy. He's 60 years old. He coached at Evansville. He's from the Midwest. He did okay there, made a couple of tournaments. Then he went to Army and was terrible. He was 59 and 140. Many years he didn't even win six games. And then he was made interim coach when Rick Majerus passed away. And we've talked about it. He's been incredible. They have a talented team. This is a team that made the tournament last year and almost beat Michigan State. But the Atlantic 10 is very good. The Atlantic 10 is better than the ACC. Okay, I don't care what the RPI says. It's not about the eye test either. They have five legitimate teams that are better than the ACC's top five teams. I'm not necessarily saying St. Louis and VCU are better than Duke and Miami, though I think it's close. But after that, they're better. They go deeper. So, and the bottom of their conference is better, way better than the ACC. He's done an incredible job. Probably 90% of college basketball fans don't know his name, don't know anything about the Billikens, but we'll see how they do in the A-10 tournament and in the NCAA tournament. A couple more things, if it's okay with you. I was going to mention Rick Barnes, just that, is this Rick Barnes' final season? I mean, how many, six, 7 years did he get to be terrible and still have a job at a school that spends their athletic budget is bigger than the federal government budget. I mean, they waste more money than the current administration. Pardon me.
You know what, Ari?
They won a game last night, and they improved to 5-10 in the conference. First game they've won, I think, against anyone but Texas Tech or TCU. But this guy doesn't really achieve much with what he's given, I feel.
Well, he actually does achieve a lot. He achieves exactly what he wants to achieve. You know, a few years ago he said, it's not my job to win basketball games. It's my job to get these kids ready for the NBA. And you know what? He's done that. He's advanced a lot of good players to the NBA, Daniel Gibson, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Durant, most notably. And he's done a great job getting players that will come to his school and he gets them to the NBA. But
Did you know what his quote was this morning, by the way? I just Googled his name to see a couple things about him. He got a quote after last night's game where he said, I don't think it's a team in the country that wants to play Texas right now. I have no further comment on that. I have no further comment. There's nothing I can add to that. So, what is this, Bracket Builder Week or Journey of the Tourney, whatever ESPN's name this week? I mean, I don't think most people outside of the college basketball department and ESPN know a thing about college basketball. You know, I don't watch ESPN, but, you know, from what I understand, they pretty much have become an NFL network with college football and occasional NBA, and they televise baseball and college hoops, but I don't think Tony Kornheiser knows, you know, more than 11 players in college basketball. Then again, I don't know if Dick Vitale does either.
He knows all 11 players for Duke, Ari. All 11
Dukes. I don't think he does, by the way. I think he probably knows 5 or 6 at Duke. The state of college basketball, I don't want to give you license to rant here. We're going to try to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. We've been going for about an hour. Do you want to, in a very calm and fair-minded and you know, thorough, not too laborious, do you want to tell me what's going on in the world of college basketball in you know, John Washburn jargon?
I'll do my best. And for those
the floor
of you
is yours,
that,
sir.
Well, for those of you that know me, you may want to turn the podcast off right now because I'm about to get on a rant, but I promise I'll try not to be too loud. I'll try not to get
too crazy.
I'm going to
cut you off in about 4 minutes, just so you know.
I'll try not to make too many ad hominem attacks and all these poor fallacies of reasoning and everything, but here it goes. All right. I hate to say this, but the problem with college basketball right now is that Butler killed it. And let me explain. Okay. Butler, and you know, I've studied him more than anybody. A few years ago, Butler figured out what a few teams figure out every single year, what Duke has been doing for 2 decades, but they figured out that there was a glitch in the system. They figured out that if you play defense a certain way, if you grab on every single cut, if you bump a guy every single time he goes through the lane, if you give a guy a shoulder every time he comes off a screen, if you come out and hack a guy every time you're hedging on a pick and roll, and if you do that every single time down the floor, they figured out that not a single officiating crew in America will call it every single time down the floor. Now, they might call it the first 2 times. They might call it 3 out of the first 4. But it comes a point where they basically get the officials to understand, look, this is how we play, and you're going to have to adjust to us. And that's what the officials do. All right. They just hack on every single play. They're this physical. And Butler used that swarming, intense, incredibly smart style of defense to get to back-to-back NCAA championships. Championship games that they lost, but they still got much farther than anyone else expected. And so now you have a lot of other teams who are looking around and they're saying, we're not getting 14 All-Americans like Kentucky. We're not getting all of the best players from Iowa, like UNC does. You know, we're not going to get the benefit of the doubt on every single road game call that we're ever going to get. And what I've seen in college basketball, more than the level of play dropping, which it has, by the way, but that's kind of cyclical, more than the level of play dropping, the officials have allowed the college game to get far too physical. And when you combine that with a couple of other factors, namely that players aren't as athletic in college basketball, that the floor is smaller, you know, the 3-point line is scrunched in, the entire floor is actually smaller, so there's less space. So you have slower guys with less space that are grabbing more. What is the result? Scoring is lower this year than it's been since the 60s and 70s, and you get these really ugly 43 to 45 games. And the end result is it's just not very fun to watch. But then you have, with that rough, tough, aggressive style of defense, then you have the other schools that are playing what I call a poor brand of NBA basketball. You know, people always like to rip on the NBA, saying it's all isolation, it's blah, 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 it's one guy, you know, it's all about the stars. And in a lot of cases, that is true. You know, if you have LeBron, that's really all you need. You can make the playoffs and stuff like that. But you have teams like North Carolina that are trying to play an NBA style of basketball. You have teams like Kentucky with their dribble drop offense that are trying to play an NBA style of basketball. But they're just not NBA players. And you can play the exact same system, the exact same way. You can make the exact same decisions that NBA players make, but you're still a college basketball player. And that's become like a cheap knockoff of the NBA. So when I watch North Carolina play, I cringe and I say, well, I'd rather just watch the real thing. I'd rather watch LeBron play than these LeBron wannabes. And when I watch other teams like Butler, who I love, and so many of these smaller schools that are starting to play better, and even your bigger schools like Michigan State and Ohio State, these schools that will play defense, they've done a great job of making the game as ugly as possible. And in the process, they're really hurting college basketball.
Well, I'm not going to try to counter it. I, as you know, like many, enjoy college basketball more than the NBA, but basketball is also not my favorite sport. Baseball is. So I don't see the nuances of it. I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you. I'm sure some would disagree, but I'd be interested to hear those who disagree. I'd be interested to hear why they disagree and why they think the NBA is not fun to watch. So there's comment sections on this page. There's our emails. You know, there's, you can call in if we do this again. There's things like that. Before we go.
Well, you know, that answer is very simple. Here's a reason why you'd want to watch college basketball. The atmosphere is just better. And on a daily basis, January and February games, the college players do care more. You know, once the NBA gets to the playoffs, those players are playing just as hard. But you're not going to see fans rush the court in the NBA. You know, you're not going to hear fans in the NBA chant incredibly awful things towards other players like you will at Duke, you know. And that passion is truly what drives college basketball. And even though it so often becomes ugly and it's hard to watch and it will fail what I call the mute test, you know, put a game on mute, can you still watch it? So many college games don't. College basketball is not supposed to be watched on mute. You got
I
the
want
crowd.
I want on mute right now. Great. Watching Ohio State Northwestern on mute. Come on.
College basketball
it's a good game.
Is still
it's on mute.
As good
it
as it gets from an atmosphere standpoint. Oh, Dick Vitale. See, and that's
but,
a good thing about
what?
College basketball. So,
And I'm interested to hear, not necessarily from you or anyone in particular, but, you know, if there's a similar aspect to college football, because we know, and I don't want to get way out of tangent, that college football relies a lot on the tailgate, the beer. Not that other sports don't have beer, the hype, and so on and so forth. The quality of play, you know, is very good in some respects, but four-hour games, lots of commercials and 10 minutes of action, you know, in college football, you know, 8 or 9 times a year. It's very interesting to see why and how people get interested in college basketball. Let me just a couple more points before I go. I want to just, and this is not like it's my place to do this, but I want to commend or mention a couple teams that have done great this year that are ranked. Akron, 23-4, undefeated in the Mid-American Conference, has the longest winning streak in college basketball, I believe 19. Won an overtime game against second-place Ohio last night. They're obviously going to the tournament. Probably will get an at-large if they don't win the MAC tournament. Louisiana Tech probably won't get an at-large, but they've had an incredible season. They are 24-3 and undefeated in the WAC. The WAC is a totally different conference than it was before. It used to have really legitimate teams. Now they've got Texas Arlington and Texas State and Texas San Antonio and Seattle, and it's a strange conference. But Louisiana Tech, nonetheless, who's crushing Utah State, used to be a good team, Utah State, in their Big West days. They're undefeated. They're going to the tournament if they win their conference tournament. Saturday afternoon, Creighton and Wichita State are both 12-5 in the Missouri Valley. will play for the conference crown in Omaha. Creighton is fifth in the nation in attendance again this year. They get about 18, 19,000 a game. I've been to a couple games. Should be a great atmosphere. Both teams are going to the tournament. Wichita State, much as I don't cheer for them, was picked fourth in the conference, lost a lot of players, had injuries. Greg Marshall's done a great job with that team. They weren't supposed to be where they are. It was supposed to be Illinois State that was up there with Creighton this year. And Wichita State was in first place until last night when they lost to Evansville. So McDermott will be on display at 1 Eastern Saturday on ESPN against Wichita State. Jared and his friends will be back Saturday after the Iowa-Indiana game. Iowa, who is I don't think they're on the bubble because they basically collapsed against Nebraska last Saturday afternoon here in Lincoln. But they need some wins. And obviously, Lincoln is a tough place to play. That game starts at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central. So Jared and the boys will be on around 9 Central, a little before that. Iowa really is a pretty good team. But they have to, you know, play Illinois after Indiana, and then they host Nebraska. So they've definitely got to win two of those three and probably do well in the conference tournament. John, final thoughts, not overarching, you know, comments about the game itself, but anything else you want to mention that we didn't get to tonight? Do you want to talk more about Miami and Duke? Do you want to just, you know, talk about it for the next 48 hours?
You know, I just I want to end on a positive note, a really positive note, and this is what I got. I'm from the state of Indiana, grew up in Carmel, you know, big Purdue fan, loved going to Butler games. But really, I just love the state of Indiana, and I specifically love the state of Indiana basketball. And I wanted to give a shout-out to my friend James Reynolds that brought this to my attention the other day, pointing out the dominance of the state of Indiana, not just in general, but in college basketball this year. You know, Ohio State's best player, we already talked about him, Deshaun Thomas, one of the highest scorers in Indiana State basketball history. Two of Michigan State's three best players, Harris and Dawson. IU's best player in three starters, Cody Zeller, Yogi Ferrell, Jordan Halls. Michigan's third and fourth best players, Robinson, Mitch McGarry. Guess what state they all come from? The beautiful state, the state that I called home, Indiana. And college basketball, four of the best teams from college basketball's best conference are built on the shoulders of Hoosiers. And I love that. And that just makes me feel all warm and cozy inside.
Hey, you know, it's a great point. I was talking to someone here in Nebraska the other day about Indiana high school basketball and how 9 of the 10 biggest gyms are in Indiana, including Newcastle, where I've been. Indiana public schools have produced almost a dozen players that are in the NBA right now, including George Hill of the Pacers from Broad Ripple High School. I lived there from 2006 to 2011, five of the best years of my life for me and my wife. Neither of us had ever lived in the Midwest. Fell in love with the city, fell in love with the state, loved driving around it, loved the people. You know, people that have visited me that were skeptical of the state of Indiana have enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll ever live there again. We'll see. I know you're happy where you are, but it's a great place. They've got great college basketball. And I'll tell you what, don't forget, there's another guy I want to mention on your list, Jake Odum, O-D-U-M. Some of you probably know him. He's the point guard for Indiana State. They made the tournament 2 years ago. They played against Syracuse. He had a pretty darn good game. He's a real shifty, athletic, lanky, you know, 6'4", 165 point guard. He was a walk-on. He went to Terre Haute South Vigo High School. He dreamed to play for the Sycamores. He walked onto the team, and he's their best player as a junior. He was probably their best player as a freshman, but he's averaging 15 a game this year. He's a great passer. He averaged 11 last year. You know, the team was on the bubble until about 2 weeks ago, and they kind of fell off. They probably won't make the tournament unless they win the Missouri Valley, which they did 2 years ago. But just guys like that, you know, guys on the bench for Butler, you know, you don't hear about the Eric Fromms, the Chase DeGauls, and all the guys from years past. And there's plenty of guys in IU, and there's probably guys in every conference that are from Indiana. And if you love basketball like you do, it's heaven. And high school basketball tournament was one of my favorite experiences I've ever enjoyed. And coming from California, where no one gives a you-know-what about high school sports, it was fun. So, John, we've gone an hour and 15 minutes. I think we can close the books. Do you want to say one last word? I kind of stole your thunder there, but any final words? Should we do this again? Any thoughts?
I think we should definitely do this again. I guess my last words, go Pacers. Playing the Clippers tonight, big game. Big game for Indiana.
All right. Well, for John Washburn, I'm Ari Kaufman. We hope you enjoyed, and we will talk to you again. Look forward to Jared and his company coming back Saturday night. Enjoy the Duke-Miami game, folks, though. Most importantly, enjoy that. Good night.
Have a good one.
Watford for the win! Yeah!